Jackie's patience was wearing thin. Charles, her husband, and Charles, her husband, and Danny, her son. Let's do that again. Jackie's patience was wearing thin. Charles, her husband, and Danny, her son, were at it once again. Now that Danny was a growing teenager, he was also becoming a smart aleck. He had fantastic grades in school, and he seemed to have a brilliant future full of promise. His dad, Charles, was also a highly intelligent man, but given the necessities of life, having to work from a young age to make a living, and not having had the best educational opportunities, he was not living his full potential through his work. Danny's quickly rising success was a bit of a threat. You think you're so smart, eh? You think you know everything. Well, let me tell you the way things were when I was growing up and my father and grandfather before me. Danny had heard all this before. When was his dad, when was his dad going to give it up? I know, replied Danny. I know all about the Depression and the Second World War and you growing up in a working class neighborhood. I've read about it and I've learned about it in history class. I know I've had opportunities you have not had. But just because I haven't been through things like that doesn't mean I don't know what it's like to have a tough time. What do you know about tough? You just think you know everything because you read it in books. You just think that you can get all the knowledge you ever need by looking it up on the internet. You know little, if you ask me, replied Charles. Jackie knew what was going on. Danny was now growing up, and he was challenging his father's authority. And sadly, in the process, he was putting his father down. Charles, on the other hand, was being forced to face his own disappointments, shortcomings, lost opportunities. And this as he watched his son growing with a promising future ahead of him. How would all this play itself out in the years to come? Now, I don't know if you've ever encountered this kind of family dynamic. I, for one, have seen this kind of thing in many a family. Knowledge, or the claim of knowledge, becomes a tool to get power over others, to feel superior to others. The person who knows is the person who's got confidence and control. Is it any surprise then that in our advanced scientific and technological age, knowledge is held up as the god above gods? To know is to rule. Sure, there's political and economic and military power, but knowledge is far greater because it is knowledge which makes things, discovers, invents, and develops things. Knowledge unlocks mysteries and finds ways to manipulate and change the world to human advantage. Knowledge is the true God, for knowledge is the way to true power that doesn't require force or intimidation to recognize it. Is it any wonder that in our educational system and the pressures on our system, and certainly from governments, among other sources, from primary school onwards, there has been a steadily shifting focus away from the artistic, the spiritual, and the contemplative toward the informational and technical. It is technical knowledge that is acknowledged as priority. This is because we see information about the world and technology to shape the world as our means to salvation as a civilization. But is this so? Is this so? Is our salvation as a civilization to be found in this kind of informational and technical knowledge? Long ago, the philosopher Socrates said something different about knowledge. He said, "The truly wise person is a person who knows how little they know. Humility about what you know is more valuable than demonstrating how much you know." And this approach to knowledge leads to wisdom because it leads to the seeker toward openness, toward wonder, toward awe, qualities much more valuable to learning than information. Openness, wonder, awe, they also lead to love. And the deepest kind of knowledge can only come when we come to love that which we seek to know. Loving something or someone rather than seeking to know them in order to control and manipulate and use them. That's the path to true knowledge, according to the ancients. But why use the word love for this kind of knowing? What does love really have to do with knowledge? Loving may be a really nice thing to have in life, something to make life cozy, sweet, and warm, but the kind of knowledge we really need in our world is the kind that can make things and change things, predict things and control things. Really? Is information and technical knowledge really our salvation? Or do the ancients have something to teach us moderns? Consider where knowledge divorced from love has brought us as a civilization. Can a biologist who speaks about trees in purely objective, non-loving terms tell us why it's so important to care for trees beyond their utility to human welfare? Can anyone tell us why we must love and reverence the earth if it's just raw material for our utility or self-interest or our economy? How can we talk of beauty, wonder, awe? How can we open our hearts to trust in a larger whole without infusing our knowing with loving? Indeed, without love, knowledge, it's a dangerous thing. Knowledge is what makes weapons as much as it makes medicines. And knowledge about medicines without love allows people to falsify experiments and distort data for the sake of profit and market advantage. Knowledge without love makes all kinds of products without recognizing the cost to our environment, our atmosphere, the well-being of future generations, or the well-being of people in less prosperous parts of the earth. Indeed, knowledge without love can only lead in the end to destruction. Now, certainly, there is the very necessary rule of law. Law is there to protect and enforce well-being because of the knowledge that people will not do the right thing out of love, the knowledge of good and evil, right? We're not naive, we know. But law alone can never solve the world's problems, nor can it atone for every wrong done. Love. And love alone must be the foundation and purpose. As Christians, this must be the gospel we proclaim, the good news about the love of God. We proclaim it by our attitudes, our words, our commitments, and our votes. But now that I've brought Christianity into it, let's consider the revelatory wisdom of the Bible, and let's begin with our reading from Genesis. The story of the first humans is not meant to tell us scientifically about how the world began. That's a misreading of the Bible. Rather, this story is meant to tell us morally and spiritually how we were made to live. There is us with this great mystery we call God, and there is us with each other and the earth, a three-way relationship. What happens when this relationship breaks down? What causes the breakdown? Well, we're told that human beings were made ex amore, out of love. God's motivation, you know, God's motivation, we're told in this story, you know, for creating the universe and all that is in it, God's motivation is not knowledge or sport or fun or a relief of boredom. No. God's motive in creating the world is love. And love, by its nature, seeks relationship. Love seeks to find ways to commune with others, others who then respond. Love seeks reciprocity. God made the world and God made us so that God could love that which is alive and is truly other than God. So what use is love if there's not something or someone who is truly other whom we can love and who then can respond with love? What use is it? And our purpose as human beings arises accordingly. We're told that we're made in God's image. This means that we too are made for love, for relationship, for communion, if you will, communion. We're made for relationship or communion with God, who is the source of everything, and we're made for relationship with other humans. We're made for relationship with the earth and all its creatures, and the core value that should sustain these relationships that links them, it's not knowledge. It's not knowledge. Rather, the core value, the core motive, the core ground of such relationships ought to be love. Love is the primary thing. No matter how smart or dull we are, no matter how much we know or how ignorant we are, no matter which creatures are more intelligent and which ones are less so, love makes no distinctions according to utility or grade point average. Life is absolutely valuable, and no life can be treated without reverence and thanksgiving. Reverence and thanksgiving, even when it includes the necessity of killing in order to eat. Reverence and thanksgiving for the privilege of nourishment. It's something that must be reflected in how we undertake to generate our nourishment ever more humanely and sustainably if we love all creatures and our Mother Earth. Again, love is the primary thing. But what happens in Genesis as the story progresses? By chapter 3, we have the first humans who are not satisfied with loving. Love involves trust. Trust involves, you know, vulnerability. It's about giving up control and autonomy in order to share, to give, and to depend on each other. But knowledge is about power and control. Power and control to shape my destiny, my destiny. God knows, the serpent tells them, God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God, knowing good and evil. If you're like God, you don't need God. You don't need others. You will know, so you don't need to depend. And the more you know, the more you can become autonomous and independent of other life around you and, in fact, use it to build yourself up. You can manipulate and shape everything around you, using it to enhance your own life. You can be your own gods. And we know how the story ends, don't we? At least this story. Not only does this knowledge of good and evil make them grow up fast, but it makes them more anxious about life, more mistrusting and more fearful. You know, to turn away from love, even if it be in the name of knowledge, leads to disaster. In fact, knowledge without love intensifies the disaster because it gives people tools to harm, to oppress, and to destroy, be those tools a gun which can kill outright, or a degree which can make people think they're so smart and put others down because of it. Certainly, Adam and Eve do gain some knowledge from their experiment in eating from the forbidden tree. They do gain knowledge. They gain the knowledge of how small how weak, how vulnerable they are in this vast universe, how much they are not indeed in control. Without God, without relationships undergirded by love, there is mistrust, suspicion, fear. And this is symbolized by the fact that Adam and Eve go into hiding and they try to cover up their nakedness. You know, nakedness and the need to hide is a reflection of anxiety, of fear, of lack of trust, of shame. Because the world is a threatening, dangerous, and shaming place, how do we know shame unless others make us feel ashamed? The solution out of this mess, then, is not greater knowledge. Greater knowledge leads to greater power of some who use it over others, and they exacerbate the fear, the mistrust, and the oppression that our civilization has become so expert in developing. Love, on the other hand, as the apostle tells us, builds up. Love, when it is sought and nourished, builds up trust, builds up relationship, community, hope. And any knowledge that is gained is focused on building community, on sharing, giving, and fostering a sense of well-being for others. When others are cared for, a person also finds peace and joy in oneself. So as Christians, then, may we find ways not to be swayed by the world's worship of technical and informational knowledge. May we hold up love as our criteria of knowledge. Is it undergirded by love? Otherwise, it's a dangerous, dangerous thing. Because we were all made out of love and for love. All life has. That is our essence as human beings, for this is the essence of the God we worship, who is creator, who is spirit, and who is the enfleshed embodiment of love that we call Jesus. Knowledge puffs up, but love builds up, declares the apostle. Knowledge is critical for us as a species. It is. But unless knowledge is in the service and under the dominion of love, it will destroy our ever more fragile planet, more and more species, and eventually us. Love demands that we don't go down certain roads of knowledge and technology. Love demands restraints, sacrifices, and simplicity of life so that other life may flourish. Love must rule, or else we will all die physically, even as we are shrinking spiritually. May God find a way into more and more human hearts before it is too late. Our future generations depend on what we do and how we live today.